favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Fucking 25-year-old.
You almost said 30. You almost called me 30.
No, I was not 30. I was trying to think of like 3 years later, but
I was just like, I'm not in my 30s yet.
But I was like, 3 years, like, fuck, I don't know. I couldn't figure out.
It's okay. I thought you were going like, you're almost, because like all your friends are in their 30s.
No, you're not close to 30 yet. Trust me. You'll feel it when you get there.
Great.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Great.
Oh, that's the best. I love the 30s so far.
I remember when you turned 30.
Yeah. Oh, back in the Riverside days.
Yeah,
that's
back
right.
In the Inland Empire.
Ay. All right, well, we've had a nostalgia trip right now. Shall we? Shall we bring this nostalgia trip to
good old 1992?
1992. That's right. I think it's time for this part two in 1992.
Yeah. Right. All right. Let's go ahead and get started. Oh, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, Anthony Fuentes. How the hell are you?
Oh, it's been an interesting roller coaster of a day, but you know what? We're watching an interesting roller coaster of a movie.
I feel like
it's applicable.
God, what a weird movie.
He's weird. Yes.
We are talking about Pet Sematary 2.
That's right. We're trying to get the spooky Halloween vibes just a week early for you guys. Because this is a Halloween movie.
Kind of. I mean, Halloween happens in the movie.
Yeah. And then it's Stephen King and it stays spooky.
Yeah, I mean, it's spooky.
Yeah.
It's something.
I mean, it's a terrifying November for these folks, so yes. Oh hell. Did you have fun? Was it a fun one?
No.
Oh.
I lost track, because there was a point where I was keeping track of the instances of animal abuse.
Oh. I like, yes, plural immediately. Yes, there's plenty of that.
Instant animal abuse.
Yeah.
Instant human death.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it's webbed together in a plot that makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Like, none.
I am not ashamed to admit, I barely paid attention, and I still know everything that happened in this movie.
Well, I mean, this movie is Cliff Notes Stephen King.
I'm laying on that couch, on my phone, scrolling through Twitter, and I occasionally would look up and be like, yikes, and like, go back, and I'd be like, I'm listening.
We had such different watch experience. I've actually seen it twice in preparation for this podcast. It's late. Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about it. But what?
All right.
What does IMDb properly summarize this excuse for a plot?
Yeah, sure. A teenage boy and his father move to his recently deceased mother's hometown, where they encounter the Native American cemetery with the power to raise the dead.
Oh, shit.
Written by Richard Outten and directed by Mary Lambert.
Neither of whose name is Stephen King, so.
No connection to Stephen King.
No.
So this movie is starring.
If you heard a big pause there, it's because there was a plane hovering for a solid 10 minutes. For some reason, circling Alex's apartment complex.
I'm being followed.
Yep. They know about your quote-unquote trade, Miss Kingpin. They know. All right.
They know. God, how cool would that be if I was just secretly, like, I don't know, some, like, underground crime boss?
Oh, shit. I was operating with the assumption that was the case the entire time. I'm like, I'll do as much writing work as I can, man.
How else can she afford to live by herself?
I know, right? It's nice. Oh, but this is, of course, starring
Edward Furlong.
Oh, of Terminator 2 fame. Yeah. And who has a very good mom scream.
Mom.
He's done it for like a couple movies. It's great.
He's typecast for his mom scream.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Edwards.
Who plays a very good bitch-ass dad.
He also was in ER.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. I believe if I'm thinking of the same gentleman. Okay. Anthony Edwards.
I mean, he was pretty big for a little bit. Yeah, ER.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, he was in ER. Like, he was like one of like the main characters in ER. He was also in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, he's a good old 80s, 90s boy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Clancy Brown, one of the most punchable faces in Hollywood.
Oh, this is a... He is a menacing dude in this one.
Well, he's just like a menacing guy.
Yeah, he's
like,
pretty imposing.
He's I've pretty much only exclusively seen him play villains.
I mean, he can't play a hero. He's not. He didn't got that hero face at all.
No.
Like, there's somebody with knuckles that giant. That guy is a bruiser.
Yeah.
He plays the bruiser.
Yeah. And Jared Rushton.
That's a guy.
That's certainly a person.
There you go. All right, Jared Rushton.
And the budget for this movie was $8 million. It released in theaters August 28th, 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And it made $17.1 million.
So, kind of meh. Kind of meh.
For the early 90s?
And then, of course, you release a scary movie in August. Probably not the best idea.
Yeah, why not just wait?
Oh, we'll find out just how much of a clusterfuck this release was.
Please.
Well, there isn't too much information, but, you know, I managed to dig up some stuff. So, let's break it down.
Please do.
So, seeing as the first Pet Sematary was so successful, Paramount Pictures was eager to get a sequel out the door to capitalize on that Stephen King brand that was still going strong in the early 90s. So, adaptations based on the novels It and Misery cover up the misfires like the graveyard shift. But King was finding that despite these successes, studios were being a little too aggressive with the author's brand.
Oh, no.
A.K.A. keep my name out your goddamn mouth, son.
Yeah, right.
That's what King was at. Because, of course, New Line Cinema was on the author's shit list thanks to their overuse of the King name, of course, on their adaptation of The Lawnmower Man. One, so different than the source material that a plane is just flying through. And
through your take.
Through the take. And, of course, also relaying the message that the author did not like this and successfully sued the studio for $2.5 million.
Damn.
Yeah, he got $2.5 million out of it. When accused by New Line's lawyers of doing it specifically for the money, the suing, that is, King stated, quote, unquote, I don't need their money. I'm not on welfare. I'm doing better than they are.
Jesus, what a bitch.
I love when he gets catty.
He is a catty bitch.
He's so good at it. He's like, listen, words, I'm like, goddamn, that's my income right there. I will throw words at you and you are fucked.
Oh my gosh. Have you followed Stephen King on Twitter?
No, I do not.
Okay, he's an interesting Twitter follow.
Oh, I got it.
He's a little bit like on the like aggressive liberal side of things.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I can definitely see it.
But, I mean...
But he's also Stephen goddamn King.
He's Stephen King. He can do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, King's name, of course, was in the title of The Lawnmower Man originally, when released in the 1972 issue of Cavalier Magazine. But things had obviously changed by the early 90s. So King was more protective of his reputation than ever. This being because Cavalier Magazine was a softcore porno magazine.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like The Hustler or whatever it is back in the day. So he was like, yeah, I'll get it fucking printed somewhere. It's it, you know, that early author was hungry.
I just like that it's like The Lawnmower Man. Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man, written by Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King, it's just a Stephen King movie?
Yeah.
But of course, on this detail, he states, quote, The Lawnmower Man first appeared there because basically at that time, my name didn't mean anything to anybody. But now it does. And that's the point. That's the fucking point, lawyers.
Yeah.
And if you want to take on how catty and stupid assholes Hollywood lawyers can be and how bitchy they are to their opposition, check out our Twilight Zone episode when we go into great detail on how those Nixon lawyers were fucking with the prosecution.
Oh my God. Total side note. Mm. I had to regale the tale of the Twilight Zone, like, helicopter accident to someone.
Jesus.
And he had to look it up. He was just like, this happened? And I'm like, look it. Like, I was just like, yes, this is, like, I was laying there just like, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. I am not fucking with you. This is how this well-known actor died and two children.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, I'm looking this up. I'm like, do it.
Why would you deny that? We did 2 hours on that.
Do it. Like,
yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
And then he was like, going through, he's like, oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not lying.
No. This one of the weirdest things is that the footage is publicly available, which is insane to
me. Which I've never seen, thank God.
Yeah,
but
it's on YouTube. No disclaimer, no discretion, nothing. It's just there.
Oh, God.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, that was a fun conversation.
You're like, I'm not bullshitting.
I wasn't. And yeah. I was just like, okay, wait, sure, Google it. See what happens. Like, ruin your fucking
I love it when you can challenge. You're like, you know what? Yeah, I know I'm right. Fuck it. Just do it. Like, just do it. I'm waiting right here for the results, buddy.
God.
It happens. Of course, unfortunately for Paramount, Stephen King... did not make Pet Sematary 2 novel at all, but they knew people would associate his name with the title. Yeah.
Bitches.
So after, however, foreseeing this and after some aggressive lobbying, Stephen King came out victorious, and he turned their asses down when it came to using his fucking name.
Yeah, they were gonna make like Stephen King's Pet Sematary 2.
And he's like, well, hold on, he won $2.4 million or whatever. It's like, let's leave him alone. Just the name Pet Sematary, right? That's all we need. Of course,
he was tired of people using their name.
Yeah. No, he's pretty successful by this point.
Yeah,
he can kind of swing his dick around a little bit. I think so. So of course, because of this was not going to be a Stephen King movie. Now it had to be a Mary Lambert movie, until it wasn't, kinda, unfortunately, because we are dealing with good old studio politics.
Ooh.
Yep, Lambert, who directed the first Pet Sematary film with a script from the famous author, wanted to use the Ellie character as the lead and do a true sequel to the first film. However, Paramount, possibly having fired everyone in the studio who had actually ever saw a horror film, felt a teenage girl as the lead wouldn't be very profitable.
Huh? In 1992?
They're dumb.
That's stupid.
They're really dumb. Yeah. Remember, this is during that, like, lull in horror, pre-Scream, where everything started sucking for a while.
I mean, this movie's not an exception.
No. This kind of solidifies that era.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty emblematic of the entire era, I would say.
Wow. They're like, we have to shake up the genre. Let's completely...
No more teenage girls!
What's a teenage girl?
Where'd all the money go?
So, with green dollar signs in their eyeballs, Paramount managed to snag Edward Furlong as the lead, who had previously made huge waves in Hollywood with the release of James Cameron's Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Unfortunately, this was also during a time of turmoil for the young actor and his estate, who received less than favorable prying from sleazy 90s tabloids.
Yeah, if you ever look at the history of Edward Furlong, his career is... It's child actor 101.
Oh, no.
No, like the whole estate,
really?
The parents, the uncles, and like everybody trying to get a piece of this, and him
that
being
sucks.
Thrust into everything. It's so sad. Like, it's really... And this is, like, when this stuff's starting to really show itself, unfortunately. Yeah.
Hollywood politics. Where would this podcast be without you?
I know. Thank you for all that fucking content. Jesus.
I mean, we're not going to benefit off of poor Edward Furlong's tragic history here, but...
No. I really hope you actually... I don't know if he's recovered since.
I don't know.
He's had a tough time, for sure.
Jeez. So, despite Paramount squashing director Mary Lambert's ideas and making her start from total scratch without access to King, thanks once again to studio politics, King specifically chose her for the first film after all.
Mm-hmm.
Lambert was a trooper and found a focus for her new film.
That's good. See, she's still a creative.
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. still trying to make the most out of it. So on this, she says... Pet 2 is really about seeing the whole thing from a teenage boy's point of view. As we all know, teenage boys do not have the best judgment in the whole world. That part of their brain is still developing. So that's the way I approached it once we settled on the basic plot and story, unquote.
That's right.
It's true.
I mean...
As a former teenage boy, I'm sure you can attest.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think you had...
We are dumb.
You didn't make the best... have the best decision-making skills?
No. I think the level of decision-making skills really went into my early 30s, to be honest with you. So... Even then,
you still have lapses in judgment that we've...
Yeah. Oh, no. Down to this week. So, yes.
Down to this week.
Not great. Nothing's worse than being a 34-year-old teenage boy.
No! Yikes. Way for giving me hope for my dating future.
34-year-old teenage boy. That should be my first stand-up special. That's the title of it right there.
I love it. Newcomer Jason Aguirre, who starred as the other teenage lead, Drew. Maguire was nervous and timid on set as he had only starred in elementary school plays prior to making an R-rated Hollywood sequel.
Oh, that's a big leap. That's a big leap, little buddy.
Aw, he even got a PA in trouble for pointing out a continuity error when he noticed a worker's glove on a prop boulder.
Oh, this innocent little bastard.
Aw. Which is funny because I noticed continuity errors. Like, oh. It wasn't... Why are we making poor... Maguire in charge of continuity on set.
Hey, that's not right. You'll never win this town again. What? Oh, I was talking to the PA guy. That's fine. You're good, kid.
You're good, kid. So on this, he says, quote, I remember somebody got their ass chewed out. I feel bad, actually, because I got someone in trouble,
such
unquote.
An innocent little...
That is very innocent and really wholesome for a very not wholesome and not innocent movie.
No, but he plays Drew so well.
I wanted to just bake this boy cookies.
Yes, like,
you know,
right?
Like, I was just like, you poor bastard.
I'm like, buddy, you're gonna get a girlfriend in your 20s, okay? You'll be fine. Just be a good person and work out a little bit. You'll be all right.
You're fine. Just hang in there.
Ay, ay, ay.
So... the closest connection this movie has to Stephen King, aside from the name and setting, was actually the props used on set, as some of them were the exact same ones used in 1990's It, the miniseries. Being frugal was probably necessary, though, as this sequel would have a smaller budget than its 1989 counterpart. So, way to go, guys.
Yeah. Way to show you have faith in the property. Yeah.
Right? So at least actor Anthony Edwards made it out okay. He actually met his wife, makeup artist Janine Lovell, on the set and marrying just 2 years later. I mean, they did get divorced about 11 years after that. You can't win them all.
Like. No. Hey, over a decade. Pretty good.
Sure.
Yeah. That's in America.
America. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, this wasn't even shot in Maine, despite being set in Maine. It was too cold when they were filming. They instead filmed in Georgia, as the foliage could be described as close enough. Fuck.
Really? And those good old Georgia tax breaks probably had nothing to do with it, too,
no,
huh?
No. It's not like why most movies are filmed in Georgia.
Walking Dead theme.
Thankfully, the animals in this film were treated with extreme care on set, with Pet Sematary 2 receiving major recognition from Humane Hollywood. And you know what? I was wondering about this because, like I mentioned up top, if it makes it into this episode, the amount of animal abuse right up top, which is really just...
Oh, yeah. I gave you a warning text just in case.
You did. You did. And I am grateful because if I hadn't, I would have been really upset.
Yeah. I remember finish watching it and I'm just like, let me just shoot it over and just give her a heads up because it is going to be graphic.
It is upsetting.
Yeah. This is a pretty graphic one. But yeah. How did this under budget, studio mandate written sequel with no returning characters do when it came time for release? Let's just say King was right to have his name removed from this one. So, not great. Pet Sematary 2 was absolutely slaughtered by critics and opened in third place behind Honeymoon in Vegas and Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. It made $4,825,100.
Nice.
That weekend. But it would actually only gross around $17.1 million by the end of its run. About $40 million less than its predecessor.
Damn.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was technically profitable, but also technically kind of a giant disappointment. They were looking for a lot more.
Technically, they made money. But, I mean, they're trying to make, like, at this point, what, $57 million at least on a $8 million movie? Like, come on.
Yeah, no. I didn't say they were smart about it. They were not. But listen, we can read you a bunch of reviews from critics, but we got other reviews coming up that you guys like a little more. So Rotten Tomatoes critic consensus sums it up the best. Quote, not realizing that it had no unfinished business, Pet Sematary rises from the grave once more to beat an undead corpse. Unquote. This got 22%.
This was the first thing I saw when I Googled the movie. When I saw that it had a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, I was like, what the fuck are we watching, Flynn?
Oh, yeah. Fun stuff.
What the fuck?
Fun stuff. Hey, 22%. You got it. That sparks the curiosity for me. Like, how? Why?
No,
how?
It doesn't. I'm just for a sequel for a movie that we didn't even like that much.
I know we stepped on a lot of toes with Pet Sematary 1. I remember that one. I'm sorry, guys. Still doesn't hold up.
No.
But man,
we made some people mad.
We did. We did. After getting our hopes up with. By the way, if you want to look at an interesting history of this podcast, we gained a pretty good amount of viewership or listenership from that first Pet Sematary episode.
Did we really?
Yeah, because the new one was coming out.
Oh, yeah, huh.
We managed to get some pretty good timing. There was a lot of hype when we posted that it was coming soon. And people were asking us, like, oh, shit, I love this movie. I love this movie. I love this movie.
Oh, yeah.
We had to very politically, like make comments like, oh, yeah. Check out our opinion soon.
I remember that because that started, I want to say, the Horrible People's Podcast curse of every time we spend the entire episode shitting on the movie, there is at least two people who comment on the announcement post being like, I love this movie.
Hyped. They're always hyped.
And they're so excited. And I have to just sit there and be like, I am just angry.
Oh, it's
the whole time.
It's sorry, bros. So
sorry.
Unfortunately, this put a major damper on Mary Lambert's career, as she wouldn't work on a film for theatrical release in almost a decade later, and that one was a flop too. So at least she found some work on some TV movies. So.
Yeah, she also had a pretty extensive career directing music videos.
Yes, yeah, she did really good for a while.
Yeah,
yeah, she did, and she did return to horror with Urban Legends.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, it was one of the later ones. And then also Halloween Town 2. So, yeah. Way to go. Paramount would also grow cold of King, putting the Pet Sematary franchise on hold until 2019. And only making one more King adaptation in between. 1996's Thinner.
Ugh.
That was also a gigantic flop. Paramount doesn't know what they're doing when it comes to Stephen King.
Thinner isn't good.
Yeah, it's not a great movie.
It's not.
It's not a great movie.
It's also just like, I'm sorry, but Thinner, I want to say it was written during Cokehead Steve era.
Very possibly.
Like,
I can imagine that.
Come on. It's a guy who just gets thinner and thinner and thinner. Cokehead Steve.
Oh. How do I empathize with this character?
Exactly. But no, like, the concept, like, is just, it's ridiculous. Like, I enjoy Stephen King in a lot of regards, but some of his concepts and some of his stories, like, are left wanting.
I actually gotta admit here, another take from Anthony's childhood is, I did see Thinner in theaters at 9 years old.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I think I don't think it was all the kids. It was me and, like, some of the older cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And then either my parents or my uncle. It was probably my parents, actually, when I think about it. Because we watched scary movies. That's just what we watched.
Sure, I get it. But, like, did you,
scared the shit out of me. Something about it really unsettled me that I watched it when I was old.
There's something, incredibly macabre about watching, someone just get smaller and smaller.
Well, it was weird because he, sort of wins. Spoilers for 1996 movie. He's, sort of wins, but it gives a very Stephen King-y ending where his daughter ends up eating the thing that made him thinner. And my little brain was like,
no.
Oh, that's so dark. Like I was like, no, not her. It destroyed my little mind.
You still believed in happy endings.
I did. It was such a not happy ending. And I walked out the theater mouth agape, silently driving back home to go to one of our fucking niece's birthday parties or something. It was a whole thing.
That's upsetting.
Yeah. But hey. How about some good news here? We got some fucking Letterboxd reviews.
Woo!
Yes. In stats, that can be pretty much summed up as divisive. So, Pet Sematary 2 goes straight down the middle with 2.5 stars out of 1.2K reviews.
Wow.
Both numbers, of course, being handily beaten by its predecessor yet again. No way around that. So, let's get into it. Carlo V gives the sequel 4 stars, saying, strong 1992 vibes,
true,
relatable textures, and analog as shit. Clancy Brown stars as Bud the Chud, and Anthony Edwards dreams about fucking a wolf with titties.
It's It's true. This is the movie.
Oh boy.
This is what you get when you watch this movie.
Yes.
That scene where Anthony Edwards is fucking a wolf with tits, like, it is like, I'm just like, what's going on here? What fever dream is this?
Yeah. That's a literal fever dream. Yes. It's great. Of course, Cam gives the film 2.5 stars, saying Clancy Brown steals the show as he proves that sometimes not dead is better. In fact, his gallant performance is the one thing that resurrects what would have been an incredibly bad film and at least makes it watchable.
When he comes back, it's other than the sexual assaults.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the pretty blatant, brutal kind of sexual
assaults. Yeah. It's, yeah.
It's menacing.
His gonzo, like, mm-hmm. is pretty it's pretty entertaining. Clancy Brown also, again, just menacing well.
Yeah, he does a really good job, I'd say, actually. And I didn't include this in the outline, but he did win an award for this. It wasn't like Academy Award or anything, it's like a Saturn.
Of course
award.
Not. If this movie won anything close to an Academy Award.
Actually, he didn't win. He was nominated, but he was beaten by Anthony Hopkins for Hannibal Lecter. So,
Yeah.
If you're going to lose to somebody, your second place to Hannibal Lecter is not that bad.
No.
And finally, we'll top it off with Brundlefly's full 3-star review. So, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of place, melodramatic ballads that turn moments of sadness into moments of guffaw-inducing hilarity. Ridiculous character motivations leading to even more ridiculous situations. An unhinged Clancy Brown. The stupidest looking electrocution scene maybe ever. Corny Halloween campfire stories, fever dreams, sex with wolf-human hybrids, a closing that features an in-memory montage of... complete with motion portraits of the dead, kind of how the Oscars do. Excessive screaming, shouting, and laughing. And just a terribly unapologetic mean streak. Animals and kids are harmed a lot. Pet Sematary 2 is a complete... and total mess. I like it more than the original. That's the if I'm gonna sum up any review that is my feelings, it is this exact review right here.
Yeah.
It's fucking
that's
crazy.
That's the movie.
Yeah. So of course that again, that's a pretty good summation. Thank you, Brundlefly. Thank you.
Thank you, Brundlefly.
We're gonna keep an eye on you. You're up there with some of our other people now. But let's break down a little more because if you can't tell, this is a batshit movie.
Yeah.
This is like a completely batshit movie. And I'm actually going to open up here. If all that sounds fun and stuff, then by all means, watch the movie and listen to the play-by-play. But I'm going to give you the same warning I gave to Alex. There's a lot of graphic animal violence. Like, a lot.
Yeah.
And human violence, but, like, you know, just overall.
But here's the thing. It's like, when you're watching horror films, you kind of have this expectation of human violence.
Yeah.
But I am so glad that Anthony gave me a heads up that there's graphic, like, it's not just like animal violence, it's animal abuse. Like, there's like straight up like humans being brutal to animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that was more upsetting.
Yeah. And there's a pretty like hard rape scene right in the middle. They cut away.
Yeah.
But it's kind of out of nowhere.
It's, like, kind of long enough where you're just like, where did this come from? And
yeah.
It's really weird. And, it's just like, why was this added? It was very confusing.
Yeah.
And also out of nowhere and made me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's about, I don't know, halfway in?
Yeah, about halfway, I'd say. Because it really goes off the rails after that.
Yeah, after that, it takes a hard right into Weirdsville.
Yeah. So, again, if you can handle that kind of stuff, by all means, watch the movie and give this play-by-play.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, continue with this. If not, we will gladly spoil the fuck out of this trash fire of a fucking movie right now. It is, spoiler for my feelings, just the definition of hot garbage. And I kind of love it for it.
Here's the thing.
It's a roller coaster.
I will agree with Brundlefly's review. It's a clusterfuck of epic proportions. That being said, I did somehow, some way, like it more than Pet Sematary.
I agree. You know, I wasn't bored. That first one was pretty fucking bored when I watched it again.
I was bored during both of them. I was less bored during Pet Sematary, too.
Oh, I wasn't bored at all during this one. Oh, yeah. But
Again, it was more like a hate watch.
Yes, I can totally see that. Yeah, it is. This is kind of a hate watch, because it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Really, that's what bad. I mean. Like, this was like a hate watch where this is why I was doing it. This is the epitome of a background noise movie.
Definitely, because there are scenes that pop, and you're like, holy shit, yeah,
like,
what is going on?
Yeah, if I was, like, doing something, like, if I was, like, coloring or working or doing other shit, like, you can, like, do what you're doing, stop, look up, and be like, oh, wow, that kid's getting his face ripped off with a motorcycle. Cool.
Back to my letters to orphans for Christmas.
Yeah, because that's what I do.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for making me sound so saintly.
Such a wholesome activity. You're like, oh, my God, that's a lot of blood. Okay, well.
Back to, you know, finding the cure for cancer.
There you go.
Anyway, play by play.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
Yes.
Let's fucking go. Okay. Shall you kick it off for us?
I will kick it off.
Kick it off.
So, on a set somewhere in Los Angeles, we are introduced to actress Renee Hallow and her son, Jeff Matthews.
Played by Edward Furlong.
The latter played by Edward Furlong. Pretty quickly, Renee is electrocuted to death by good old Hollywood incompetence in front of Jeff's eyes. His very eyes.
His very eyes. He got
this is right after the stereotypical, like, mom's about to die.
Yeah.
A scene where she's just like, I don't know, I don't know, Jeff, if your dad and I are going to get back together, but just know this, no matter what, I'll always love you. And the second she said that, I was like, you're dead,
like,
you're
well,
dying.
Pretty definitive declaration. I hope nothing bad happens in the next 2 minutes.
Like, the second that happened, I was just like, you're dead, you're dying, you're immediately about to, like, what, something's going to happen.
Yeah, and
then she gets the poltergeist treatment and, like, gets electrocuted.
Oh, she gets it hard, and we get ourselves our very first Edward Furlong, Mom!
It's true.
It's a pretty strong one, too.
It's good.
He's, like, in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, in it.
Yeah, he's in character, for sure.
So, in a much darker take on the Hocus Pocus plot, L.A. boy Jeff must move with his father, Chase the veterinarian, to his mother's hometown of Ludlow, Maine. It's Georgia, where they meet a cavalcade of characters. Drew, the town's analog for Milhouse, and Jeff's future best friend, Gus, Drew's stepfather / local sheriff / part-time bunny slinger, and eventually, Drew's hot mama, who, fucking hot.
She's pretty.
She's so pretty.
You know what, you forgot for Drew's, oh yeah, yeah, so Gus, you also forgot to add former lover of...
Oh, that's in the next sentence.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Also, something that I wanted to add, the scene where we are introduced to Chase the veterinarian, he's putting a dog down.
Animal death immediately, huh?
Immediate animal death. Like, I was just, like, so, like, I was like, wow, they are not pulling any punches at this.
No, no, no. It's and that's, like, the least offensive of all the animal violence that you're gonna see happening in this movie.
Yeah. So, their initial interactions, by the way, only occur because of a little kitten that gets chased by Drew's dog, Zowie, who is in need of veterinary care that only Chase can provide, because there's no other vets in small town Maine.
They're like, oh, thank God a vet moved back.
Right. This is also the scene where Sheriff Gus, as I mentioned previously, very inappropriately tells Jeff he used to be his mom's high school sweetheart.
What does he,
like,
say?
I don't know.
He's like the whole nine yards, and he looks directly at Chase's eyes. He's like, dude, what the fuck?
It's very weird. He might as well have just been like, hey, I fucked your mom. Like, it's weird. No, it would have been more like, hey, kid, I fucked your dead mom. Like, that's exactly, like...
could have been your daddy, boy. Could have been your fucking daddy.
Like, it was really weird.
Yeah. They go through great lengths to let you know that this guy is the sheriff's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He's really, really...
Which is, I mean, the second he's on screen, I'm like, oh, Clancy Brown.
You're like,
I'm like, oh, Clancy. He's a dick.
Much like, of course, the aforementioned Hocus Pocus, Jeff's California stench is pretty obvious to the local bully population, which are led by a kid named Clyde Parker, who happens to have the most punchable face of, you know, I think a cavalcade of characters with a lot of punchable faces,
Yeah.
Jeff is given the nickname Celebrity Boy.
Jesus.
In Hocus Pocus, it was Hollywood!
Yeah, it's true. I was just like, this is just like Hocus Pocus now that you mention it.
Yeah, it's exactly
all
like
you're
it.
Missing
exactly
is a teacher
like
leaning over and be like, care to lend us your California tie-dye point of view?
Oh, imagine Binks in Pet Cemetery. You can't bury me, guys. Like, we got some witches coming. This is some serious shit.
So, in, again, a very weird instance where Jeff brought his cat to school, Clyde steals said cat, where he is then ambushed by his crew of bullies near the local pet cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very opportune time for our local bullies to sum up the plot of the first movie, and for Jeff to ceremoniously get his ass kicked and be directed to said cemetery.
Boy, that's all convenient plot exposition. That's nice.
Yeah, he finishes off the needed exposition, don't worry.
Yeah. Thank God for Drew, huh?
Right?
But of course, later on that night, sometime after Jeff makes a point to remind his father's new local girlfriend that she is not, in fact, his mom, we spend some time in Drew's household, where we learn that Gus, the sheriff, and Lisa, his mama, have a hard time with boundaries, especially in front of their son. This is obviously in the between parts where Gus is being abusive as hell towards Drew, which...
He is, like, outwardly.
He's a piece of shit.
Yeah. So, sometime after this, Zowie, the still alive dog, gets a bullet to the belly, courtesy of Gus, after interrupting his lovemaking and attempting to eat one of the sheriff's, I guess, prized rabbits?
Yes, he's very, very tied to these rabbits.
Yeah, I don't know, which is weird, but cue 90s musical interludes as Zowie dies in Drew's arms. God.
This is exactly what the review's talking about. It's like a sad scene, and it's just like just butt rock just running through the whole fucking thing.
So weird.
Yeah.
So the next day, the boys vow to give Zowie a proper burial. Hell yeah. It's pet cemetery time.
Oh, yeah. Title time. Let's fucking do it. So, a desperate Drew uses this opportunity to find the real pet cemetery and explain the rules one more time to Jeff, Edward Furlong, who finds the situation absurd, but still just kind of rolls with it. He's like, "You're freaking me out, man." And Drew's like, "Dude, it's fine." And he's like, "Oh, okay, let's just go."
Yeah.
Like it's really fast.
He goes through all the stages of grief like immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes immediately to acceptance.
He's like, "Okay,
he's
cool.
Like, okay.
Yeah, we'll bury the dog. We'll bury the dog.
We'll bury it. It's fine."
Yeah. In the most like fluffy dog corpse that you can fucking money can buy in Hollywood. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But of course Drew is intercepted by Sheriff Gus on the way home, who was still acting like a dick to his stepson.
So this is like a moment of like kind of remorse where you can kind of tell he feels like kind of shitty.
He knows he fucked up, but he doesn't want to admit he's
wrong. No, I'm sorry. He never admits that he's wrong, but he's kind of just like, well, buddy, sometimes there are just lessons you gotta learn in life. Like, you know, when I shoot your dog...
Now,
for being a dog.
Pretty please, with sugar on top, get in the fucking car.
Yeah.
Like, that's the exchange right there.
It was really weird. So, when nighttime rolls around, the obviously undead Zowie returns to Drew's abode and gets him grounded.
Yeah, the least offensive thing this dog does from this point on. Yeah.
Veterinarian Chase and Jeff make a house call in a very, like, tricked out, like, vet van.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're making that Hollywood money. There you go.
And they notice the open wound on Zowie's body, opting to keep the zombie dog overnight. It's here that the boys realize the legend of the pet cemetery is true.
But Drew, we buried him. We buried him. Yeah, he's fucking alive. All right. Edward Furlong is—he's the most easily manipulated character of this entire fucking movie.
Okay.
Yeah, as you'll see as the plot unfolds, his allegiances just switch.
Yeah,
back and forth.
Like it's crazy.
It's like, oh, people are dead. Those are the good guys. Okay.
I mean, if you just kill the ones I don't like, I guess it's fine.
Of course, Jeff then has an absurd dream sequence with his mama, who dons the head of the undead Zowie. The following day, veterinarian Chase takes a sample of Zowie's zombie blood to send to a local colleague. He also stupidly houses the aggressive canine next to a cage of adorable kittens.
Yeah, what the fuck is up with that?
He's like, wow, this dog's been pretty aggressive and mean. Thankfully, this thin-ass cage is going to be right here to keep those kittens safe.
Right? Like, it's stupid.
Oh, yeah.
So, now we're back. It's Halloween night.
Yeah.
Drew is dressed as Dracula and given a hard 10 p.m. curfew, which, by the way, how old are they? Like, what, 10?
They're pretty young, huh? They're like No, like, maybe like, yeah, like 10. I'd say 10. 10 or 11.
I mean, maybe I'm maybe grossly underestimating the situation here.
They're like preteens. Because they're still kids.
If, like, my mom, like, my mom would kick my ass, like, 10 p.m. on a fucking school night on Halloween if I'm fucking 12. Are you kidding?
We had different upbringings, but yes.
We had very different upbringings.
I remember, I'm a Latino male. We get away with everything.
Yeah, you do. No fucking way. I had a, like, at the trolley stop by sundown, like...
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, that was even when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it definitely changed when we hit double digits. But I think up until 9 or so, yeah, that was the case. Definitely sundown, you get your ass indoors. I remember that shit.
Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, I did not have that. It changed when I had friends with a car.
Yes, that's a big game changer.
Yeah, once there were cars involved, it was a lot. Like, my mom was a little bit just like... Just don't make any noise coming in.
Oh, that's house party time.
Don't wake anyone up. So anyway, so 10 p.m. curfew. The boys find their way to the pet cemetery where Jeff has another vision of his mom. But this time it's in a Jason Voorhees costume, which we only see for a brief moment.
I know. We just get a hockey mask and like a jumpsuit.
And they only can show it for just like a brief second to avoid like copyright issues.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is done courtesy of the local bullies who are oddly creative with their pranks.
They're like, hey, guys, I think this guy's been having weird fucking dreams. How about we dress his mom exactly like how we think he's dreaming and then start just like emulating her voice?
Fling her from a tree. And yeah. I think we'll just watch a couple of her movies and emulate her voice.
Yeah. Is that prop mannequin at the Macy's? That still kind of looks like her, right? Yes, it does. Okay, cool. Got it. Let's fucking make sure it flies. Let's do it.
Make sure she flies.
How do we know they're going to go to the pet cemetery? You shut the fuck up, Clyde. You shut the fuck up. They're going to come here.
We'll invite them. So this is also when we get to see Gus's abusive side towards Lisa, as he comes home early and demands to know where Drew is immediately. So he's just like, he's abusive and he's a piece of shit.
And he knows shit's up too. He came home early to get smokes. So he's not being the best sheriff. He's just like, yeah, I'll make a quick stop over here.
Get some smokes.
And then he uses my goddamn sheriff pension and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, where's the boy? Ooh. He has that, like, stern, like, fucking hate you, dude. Like, you're not teaching anybody a lesson, you're just being cruel.
I know, he's just being a dick.
Yeah, well, the bullies, taking a break from beating the hell out of our heroes, once again relay the storyline from the first film, but are interrupted by a pissed off Gus, because...
How many times are they just,
oh, there's more. There's more coming, trust me. Of course, as the sheriff proceeds to beat the shit out of his stepson, and he's about to pretty much murder him with, like...
He's holding like a piece of something.
Yeah, some kind of piece of wood that he's just like, okay, well, this one's gonna smart, buddy. Like it's
yeah,
it looks pretty bad. Zowie comes to the rescue and graphically kills Sheriff Gus.
Yeah, just rips his throat right out.
It's pretty brutal. Does he get a good close up here? And of course, the boys have no choice but to bury this fresh corpse.
No choice. None. Mm-mm. No choice.
I mean.
No choice.
If their movie's called Pet Cemetery 2, you ain't got no choice.
No choice?
None.
Nah. All right, whatever.
It worked once. Whatever. All right? They don't want to get in trouble with the law.
I know. They're just like, oh, we'll just bring him back to life.
Remember Barry Lampert said, teenage boys are stupid.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So, in just a few short hours, a storm makes its way over Ludlow, Maine, and a resurrected Gus finds himself back home with an open wound on his neck and a dire need for a shower. After Gus dresses the wound, we're treated to a pretty sudden and unfortunate rape scene. It at least cuts away, but this is where it happens.
Yeah, this is the scene. It's also like a culmination of a lot of stuff in the plot, so it's really hard to like avoid, but the rape, it just really comes out of fucking nowhere.
Well, no, it comes out of nowhere, and like, it is very easy to skip over. You can see it coming, and you know when it's over.
Yeah, actually, when I would watch this movie as a kid, this was one of those points where the parents were very staunchly like, okay, close your eyes, because they knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And this is one of the times where like I really listened, just based on the tone of their voice, was like, close your eyes. And I'm like, oh, you're never this aggressive. Okay, I'm going to do it. And I put the pillow
like
on my face.
It's not like when my parents were like, okay, close your eyes. And it's like Titanic. And, I saw Kate Winslet's tits.
This is not even close to as wholesome. No.
No.
No. Yeah. So this is one of those ones that I actually didn't see the full scene until I was much older because of that, like, sheer tone in their voice was like, you are not watching this.
Yeah.
Watch the rest of the weirdness of the movie, but you're not watching this.
Yeah, the graphic murder and animal abuse, you're fine.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
The rape scene, no, no. Yeah. Nay, nay.
Yeah, yeah. So, that happened. Yeah. Weirdly enough, the following morning, Drew is finding himself okay with the new Gus, who is a lot less strict initially. We are then greeted to the results of the blood test on Zowie, which veterinarian Chase's colleague thinks is a total prank. The blood is clearly from a dead animal.
Ooh, oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Ooh, plot. Immediately after this revelation, though, it is revealed that Zowie did, in fact, murder the hell out of those kittens.
And escape. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Which we knew, because he murdered Gus.
Yeah, and it's pretty... Ugh. I mean, it's very, very telegraphed, like, what's going to happen. Yeah. Like, you can see, they're like, oh, just go back there, and you look at the kittens by yourself with no supervision.
I'm not going to go check. It's not like I didn't hear them, or I didn't feed them this morning.
Yeah,
or I didn't.
These unusually noisy kittens, are they're just quiet today. I guess it's a good time for somebody to adopt them. Yeah, and then corpses.
Corpses.
Very, very brutal.
Graphic.
Brutal, yeah.
Okay, so having discovered that Zowie escaped, veterinarian Chase seeks more. Why is that just his? Is that his full name? First name veterinarian, last name Chase.
Yeah, sure.
Seeks more information and finds his way to a taxidermist who informs him that the dog is very much indeed dead. All while also again retreading the plot of the first film,
yes.
and of course. Cue more 90s jams.
Well, more 90s jams.
Yeah.
Yay! Oh, you'll never see your dog again. He's not my dog. So, Jeff, of course, opts to sleep over at Drew's house, where the new Gus is seen having bad table manners and murdering the hell out of his prize bunny collection.
What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, he's losing it. Clancy Brown's performance in this is just like, he is... They're like, listen, dude, just chew every goddamn piece of scenery you can when the camera's looking at you.
Yeah.
That's the direction here.
Just be a weirdo.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad I got this one. So, 90s tunes and dream sequences collide as veterinarian Chase has a dream about his wife bathed in blue light as they make love. His topless former wife suddenly sports Zowie's head as she rides him, resulting in a bite from the real undead Zowie when he comes to. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, fish, what the fuck? Oh, my God. Yeah, this is the worst wet dream possible. This is so bad. But it's like, this scene in particular just keeps going. Like, this is kind of a longer sex scene.
It is, yeah, considering the circumstances.
Yeah, it's not like they just show the fucking
the wife
dog. Yeah,
or the head or the boobs. Like, it is.
There are close-ups.
Extreme close-ups of just hands on tits.
Yeah, and when the dog head comes into play on the topless lady,
yeah,
it still goes for a little bit.
And I'm sure if anyone, like, you know, early puberty must be very confused by this scene.
Oh my god, I think I honestly, if I did see it when I was younger, I tapped it out.
Yeah,
like,
you just blocked it out.
Like, it's like gone. Yeah, it's fucking gone. Because it surprised me every time I watch it. I'm like, oh, wow, they just did like... It's a POV of this dog's head just going towards the camera on a pair of tits. It's it's something else. It's not, and it's not like a good dog head. It's like pretty... It's like a Muppet.
No.
It's like it's like the thing from the NeverEnding Story just like just rolling up at you. It's really not good.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is... I want to say it's probably... It could have been cut out of the movie entirely.
I think so, too. Like,
and it would have been fine. I don't know why they were just like, we have to shoehorn in some... It's really weird. Because also, we have to see veterinarian Chase, who's not like... He's not like a sexy guy.
No. Anthony Edwards ain't the top tier now?
No.
Oh, boy. You don't like the balding head and Steven Spielberg beard and glasses that are just a little
maybe
too big?
Maybe he was cute in the 90s.
I don't fucking know.
But no, I'm just like, he's just not leaving. And it's just like, I don't want to see this guy, like, I don't know, fucking a woman with a wolf head? It's
yeah.
Weird. Again, again, she is writing him. It is obvious.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm looking. Yeah, I gotta say, the tits weren't that great either.
They're fine.
Yeah, they're just like the pretty bog standard tits.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they're just tits. I mean, which takes a lot for me to admit. Where it's just like they're fine. Like normally, I'm just like all tits are great.
No, they're too like I don't know. It's weird. It's just a weird scene.
It's weird. Yeah.
Yes. So, Jeff and Drew spend some time at the lake attempting to figure out what the hell is going on with the pet cemetery rules, but in this instance, after giving up on explaining anything, they split up. Fortunately, Jeff is in the path of the vicious bully Clyde, who makes a point to corner the California transplant by running him off the road very maliciously.
That's what I thought of.
Oh, that's great. He's just like cackling as he does
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's.
I'll get you and your little cat too. I don't know where the fucking cat is.
I'll get you, California, and your little cat too.
Hollywood.
Stupid. It's fucking stupid.
Oh, so Clyde tries to mash Jeff's face into the rotating wheels of Jeff's own bike. And of course, while asking him if he wants to join his mom.
Stupid.
He's kind of a bitch. But Jeff is saved by Zombie Gus, who decides to play the same exact prank on Clyde with Clyde's own bike, but this bitch is a motorbike instead.
Yeah.
Now, this time, of course, Clyde's scarf gets ensnared in the rotating bike wheel, and the kid's face is pretty suddenly and graphically removed.
Yeah, suddenly and graphically. So I want to talk about this.
Yes.
So this is where we have a moment of the zombies from Pet Sematary having, like, an ethos about them.
What do you mean? Like,
because, like, okay, so from the first one,
mm-hmm.
like, they kind of are just, like, mindless, like,
yes.
killing monsters.
Yes.
In this one, it's kind of like... they're saving people, like Zowie saved.
Yeah,
you know, like.
But it feels like it's for the plot. They're like doing it to like they have very particular aims.
That's exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm. Versus like the first movie, like the lore is inconsistent. Like
oh, yeah.
If you're gonna turn them into mindless killing zombies, turn them into mindless killing zombies in the first and second movie. Versus the second movie, like they kind of have some semblance of being able to pick and choose about who they kill.
Yeah.
But also, they ultimately do go totally bad, but at first, they don't. It's a very weird place to... It's
Well, this is what the kids were bitching about right before, because they were like, maybe it depends on, like, the person you were when you died? They were trying to seriously figure out the rules.
They were trying to logic it out, which maybe just don't bury dead people, but, you know, what do I fucking know?
I think that's the screenwriter... talking to himself within the script.
Yeah, right.
And be like, this is what the fucking studio wants, but whatever, I don't get it, so...
He's just...
violence time.
It's a self-thought exercise.
By the way, this scene scared the shit out of me as a kid.
Yeah, and it should.
This is one of the, like, most terrifying scenes in the movie to me.
It's terrifying, because also you get, like, a POV shot of just, like, a bike with its spinning wheels just coming down towards the camera, a.k.a. this guy's face.
And, like, Clancy Brown is being his most menacing Gus.
Yeah.
His voice is, like...
He's just like,
I'm just fucking with you, and... And it's the jovial, like, demeanor of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, taunting this poor kid. Well, not poor kid. He's kind of a piece of shit.
No, he's yeah. Also, like, the early 90s, like, dangly earrings thing he had going on. I was like, oh,
I'm surprised that didn't get ensnared in the fucking wheel right there. Oh, it is, yeah. This scene, like, honestly, I can't even express how much this like, just troubled me as a child. Like,
was it upsetting?
It was really traumatizing. Like, Ugh.
So, Drew sees this happen and flees home once he's noticed by Gus. Unfortunately, it's not enough as Zombie Sheriff and even Zowie do their best to corner poor Drew, who resorts to exiting from the top floor and hitching a ride from his mama, who arrives just in time to see Gus at his most murderous.
Yeah, this is like... The movie doesn't let up after this.
No,
like it's pretty like
yeah.
The roller coaster is finally going off the rails at this point.
Yeah,
And I remember this also terrified me because I was a kid when I saw it, so I'm obviously on the kid side, and this kid is in peril.
Yeah,
like he is in peril throughout. It's fucking horrifying. So of course, A chase scene ensues with even more 90s jams.
Oh, my God.
and Sheriff Gus terrorizes his former family before ultimately running them into a truck carrying lots of potatoes. The crash crushes the car containing Drew and his hot mama Lisa, killing them both.
Yeah, Lisa looks kind of like a discount Leah Thompson.
Oh my, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
She's definitely a discount Leah Thompson. She really is. Yeah.
That's kind of the vibes I was getting. Anyway, so if that's what you need for a visual, like, yeah, that's what she looks like.
That's right. But even a discount Leah Thompson, she's still a goddamn good Leah Thompson. Yeah. Yes. Of course, Gus, after murdering this family in another brutal kill, he returns to Bully Clyde's body and chooses to bury the bully at the pet cemetery.
Woo.
So he just lets his former family be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oy, oy, oy.
So, it's at this point that Jeff is acting weird. He goes off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
Dressing in a suit and preparing his mother's room in the attic. Professing that she will return and is scaring the hell out of veterinarian Chase.
Oh, yeah.
After this, a call comes to the house. Renee Hollow's grave has been excavated.
Mom!
Mom! Oh, Mom!
Yeah, this one's... It's such a sudden turn.
It's such a turn, and Jeff turns into, like, a true fucking weirdo.
Mm-hmm. He's, like, smiling like fucking Heath Ledger, the Joker. He's just like, ha, ha, ha. And then his dad's just like, dude, you are going crazy. What is going on? I've been getting away with shit.
I know, this poor guy. He's just like, I've been having some weird fucking dreams lately. Like,
right? I went to go to the taxidermy guy. He told me all this shit about a bunch of dead pets.
You're acting like a weirdo. What's going on? What gives?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty bad. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff sneaks out, teaming up with Gus to bury the corpse of his mother in an oddly pristine grave out of fucking nowhere. That's the only well-lit part of this whole evening. in the meantime, Chase's girlfriend goes to the attic after failing to prevent Jeff from fleeing because she was given the one job of don't let Jeff leave and she took a nap. So, instead of fulfilling responsibilities...
Chase's girlfriend / housekeeper?
/ secretary. I don't know what she had. Hired help, but she opts to try on some of Renee Hallow's clothes.
Stupid.
Yeah, not a good move.
Yeah. Chase goes to Gus's home knowing he dug up his wife and getting into a pretty brutal fight scene where Chase then realizes with a futile gunshot that Gus is actually a fucking zombie.
Oh, yeah.
He does somehow manage to shoot the undead sheriff in the head, a classic kill move. But the fight results in him unable to use one of his arms.
He gets drilled in the armhole.
Ouch.
He gets like an arm wound and then Gus comes in there with a drill. And it's fucking like, brutal.
Meow, meow.
Yeah. And he's like taunting him while he does it, but he gets one solid Leon Kennedy fucking headshot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need.
In zombie rules, yeah, that's it.
That's right, and unlike the last movie, this movie adheres very heavily to zombie rules.
Yeah.
Don't make a lot of sense. But back in the attic, live-in girlfriend is stabbed to death with a mirror shard by zombie Renee Hallow. Okay, that was a sentence. much to the delight of a demented Jeff, Mr. Edward Furlong, who is happy she has been resurrected.
Again, that's certainly a sentence.
Yes. So, less happy is veterinarian Chase, who walks into the corpse of his dead girlfriend, a resurrected wife, and his son, Jeff, acting creepy as shit.
Yeah, he's just, like, leaning on his mom, just like, hello, mommy. Like, yeah. It's really weird.
It's so weird. And Jeff just got into a fight with the zombie. He can't use one of his arms. There's been a dog chasing him this whole time. He's just like, and my girlfriend's dead, and my family's resurrected.
Wait, wasn't it established she was actually the girlfriend?
Or
are we just assuming?
In the descriptions I looked at, it had...
Everyone's assuming that she's a girlfriend.
Maybe, but then Edward Furlong at the beginning is like, you're not my mom.
That's because she tried, like, she was being like, she's just like, well, like, she said something that I would have said that too. No, it's because he had like a rough first day at school, and she's like, the first day's always the hardest.
Bitch!
Pretty much, because I would have been like that too.
Yeah.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
I mean, she's trying on her clothes. I don't know.
Yeah, because she's obsessed with her mom or his mom.
Yeah, I don't know. Just in the descriptions, they've all categorized her as the girlfriend. Who knows?
I'm curious. Anyway, so suddenly, zombie Clyde shows up and attempts to murder Jeff with an axe and a couple of one-liners.
Oh, he is killing it with these one-liners.
So he knocks out veterinarian Chase as Renee starts a fire in the attic, resulting in a pretty standard third act set piece.
Oh boy, a fire and a fight going on with the hero knocked out. How's this going to turn out?
We didn't start the fire.
He's like, nice face, Bob.
It is like they just took the voice from like any video game and from like a boss fight and like it was ridiculous. Anyway,
it's getting a little hot in here, isn't it? It's like a it's like just these weird one-liners,
very generic. It's really quite funny. So thanks to some choice eye gouging and an open electrical wire, Jeff makes the zombies. Head explode.
Very, very like if you just Gallagher hammer a melon, that's the exact shit that happened to this fucking bully's head.
Absolutely.
It just goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think it wakes up Chase too. I can't remember.
It certainly shakes him out of it because again, he takes an open electrical wire, source unknown, and just shoves it into his head, which last time I checked, I don't think that causes heads to explode, but what do I know?
I don't know. The zombie did throw up a lot, so there could be a lot of empty space and gas in there. Who the fuck knows? Anyways, Jeff snaps out of his weird mood.
You know how teenagers are.
Yeah, he's very wishy-washy. Vows to save his papa and watches his mama melt before his eyes as she cackles and demands that they all stay together, reminding them that, of course, dead is better.
Oh my god. Dead is better!
This is like...
Dead is better!
That's a very good impression. She is screaming her goddamn lungs off while her face is melting.
I can't actually scream because I don't want to blow the mic up, but yeah, she is just like wailing.
She's just like, again... I'm melting!
I'm melting! Oh god, I'm melting! Dead is better! Dead is better!
Jeff's like, let's get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry, Dad. This is my fault.
Yeah. Our surviving heroes, all two of them, flee Ludlow, Maine, complete with a kill count reminder via disembodied portraits along a main road. And even more killer 90s jams.
Down and down and down and down.
The end.
Oh, boy.
What the fuck?
Wasn't it funner talking about it than watching them?
Yes, talking about it? Absolutely. I wish I'd watch this with someone, honestly.
It's so batshit. It is okay. That guy's was the plot for remember.
That is what happened. Like, I don't think we skipped over anything. That's the goddamn movie.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. It's pretty. It's as fucked up as it is dumb. Like it's the weird. You almost don't get that 50-50 balance. But I think they nailed it. It's as dumb as it is shitty. It's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I think so.
Alex Webster, why don't you kick us off here? What'd you think of Pet Sematary 2, huh?
Oh, man.
What'd you think?
I liked talking about it so much more than I liked watching it. This podcast has made me revise my initial thoughts. Yeah. I was so mad that you picked this.
Oh, yeah?
After watching it, I was like, what the fuck? I just wasted an hour and 41 minutes of my life. I checked how long the movie was because I wanted to know how much time I just wasted.
You're like, they could have cut out 10 minutes and been fine, to be honest with you. They could have made it a clean 90.
Yeah, so it is an hour and 41 minutes long, guys. Know that before you... It is on Netflix, though, so... Yeah,
totally, you know, everybody's got Netflix.
It's pretty accessible. I hate watched it, for sure.
Yeah.
I think, like, there were some moments where, like, it is a good background... I stand by everything I said earlier. Mm-hmm. It is a good background movie, like, background noise movie, if you're doing something and you just want something, like, just going on in the background.
Yeah, you're in a spooky mood.
Yeah, and you want... I mean, technically, yes, it is a Halloween movie. Mm-hmm. and we are going into the Halloween season. But I did... Was... Mm, I'm trying to think of like a way to phrase it, because I can't say that I liked it. I can't say that it was entertaining, and I can't say that I enjoyed it. It was fine.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, that's a good... I think the Letterboxd consensus is pretty similar, because it's a 2.5 right down the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, aside from obviously not having a noted mayonnaise jar Dale Midkiff in it.
I knew it. I was just like, oh, what is he going to make a reference?
So Mr. Dale Midkiff. See, our first Pet Sematary episode for that one.
Talk about famed TV movie actor
Dale Midkiff. He's gonna be on our mugs, so I kind of love this movie. I don't say love's a strong word.
Is there like a nostalgia factor?
There's an absolute nostalgia factor to it.
Okay,
there definitely is.
Because this is the first time I watched this movie.
No, I've seen this so many times.
Okay,
I've seen it more times than I've seen the first movie, but I empathized it with a lot as a child because the main actors were, you know, young boys. So me as a kid was like, oh, okay, young boy starring the movie, you kind of empathize.
Sure.
That. But this is so not a good movie. It is garbage.
I'm glad you didn't admit it.
No, this is bad. Like, this is like, this is literally for me so bad it's good territory. Like, it is, there's nothing redeemable, really. All these characters are shit. The plot makes no sense. These special effects are gratuitous.
Oh yeah, they are.
Yeah,
I think I forget who I was talking to, but I was just explaining the movie, and he was just like, a kid's movie. He's like, it sounds like a kid's movie. I'm like, it's not.
No,
it's
this is so
graphic.
Far. Yeah,
it's so graphic. Like, it's not even like it earned its R rating.
Oh my god, I'm surprised I didn't find any MPAA bullshit on this one. Like, I mean, you're like, okay. See, but it's as I was about to bring it right here for a reference. It's so absurd sometimes, you can't help but be like, holy shit, somebody filmed this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
there is some funny moments, for sure.
Yeah, basically, like, it had things, honestly, I feel like they maybe cut out the reverse Caligor part of the sex scene with the head roll. So she didn't turn around and just be like, ah! that would have just made it a little bit more absurd. Like a hair more absurd.
A hair too absurd.
Just a hair. But her straight forward with this fucking... this fucking Muppet fucking head.
Just bear in mind, they had to film this. Someone had to be naked from the neck down with a wolf head.
Yeah, on top of Anthony Edwards.
I mean, I don't know if she was actually on top of Anthony Edwards, but...
No, I bet he didn't agree to it. I bet he's like, cut around it, please, just show my face reactions. This is... I gotta talk to my agent. This is terrible. No, I mean, this honestly, this is to me the definition of so bad it's good, because it's so bad. It's so bad.
I mean, I'll say it's so bad it's enjoyable.
It's yes, so bad. I don't say even enjoyable. There's some real
or entertaining.
Entertaining. It's so bad it's entertaining as fuck sometimes. Like, I can't.
Like, I cannot emphasize like how much like I would just sit down with someone and watch this whole movie again just for that sex scene
and get blitzed. Like, just get blitzed. Like, this... Yeah. Like we talked about this with...
I was again Stone Cold Sober and Alone, so...
Sober and Alone, the Alex Webster story.
What? Fuck off.
No, that's the Anthony Edwards story. So, Yeah. I like it, but nostalgia very heavily plays into it.
Yeah.
And... I cannot reasonably recommend this movie to almost anyone. I just can't. I mean, you have to be a pretty hardcore... We have a lot of hardcore horror fans who DM us and comment, and you guys are our G's. I fucking love every single one of you. I think all of our fans would find something in this movie. Our fans would.
Yeah.
But people who don't regularly listen, or listeners, if you're going to watch this with, like, a significant other, make sure they're on your fucking level. Make sure they are on your level. Because
I just imagine someone being like, okay, listen, like, I would love to watch this, but the podcast I listened to said you have to be on my fucking level.
Yeah, yeah, listen.
You gotta be picking up what... I mean, to be fair, the last couple of guys that I've dated, like, I would not watch this with them. Like,
No.
Because they were not on my fucking level.
There's like a handful of ladies I'd watch this with. But yeah, so in closing, on my opinions of this movie, not a recommendation at all, unless... Unless you love horror and spooky shit and you're okay with some really graphic
violence.
Unless
you're at the depraved level that we're all, that we're both at this point, where we'll just watch anything.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen some shit, guys. This to me, again, on your taste, it's so bad it's good. It's just so bad it's good. But if you don't have that taste, it's just bad. It's just really bad.
Oh my gosh. I just want to point this out, and this is just something that I've been thinking about. It's not necessarily related to this movie, but just in general. We're going into our fourth year of doing this.
Yes.
I feel so much more confident in, like, my horror movie knowledge.
Yes.
Like, I feel like we would crush a horror, or, like, even just film, but mostly horror, like, trivia night.
Oh, yeah, take us to that bar that's doing that. We're gonna, like, rock the house. Yes.
But I was talking, I was talking to someone about the freaking, just, like, horror productions, and like he was just like, so what's like a horror movie that like you love that, or like you hate that like everyone else loves? And I'm like, let me tell you about my unpopular opinions. And then I can just go into like production stories and like all this stuff, and it's all because of this fucking podcast.
That's
and
right.
I'm just like, ah, oh, I have a wealth of knowledge now, and it's all in this one really specific genre.
We're building this encyclopedia with our fans. I am happy about it.
No, it's true.
Oh, and you know, I think it helps me also appreciate again stuff like this. Which, I had the nostalgia factor going into it, but even then, like, now I'm able to, I think, appreciate it a little bit more because just how much movies we've seen. It toes the line of why, after doing this podcast for so long, movies like Halloween 4 move downward because of just, like, the lack of talent, unfortunately. Sorry, guys.
Or lack of writing.
Yeah.
Let us bear in mind, Wrong Turn and Halloween 4, same writer.
Same writer. Exactly.
We've been over this.
Mm-hmm. But then you get a director like Mary Lambert, who did, like, some major music videos in the 80s.
Yeah.
And then, of course, did the first, like, who can do something like this and still find something entertaining out of it, so.
I got entertainment out of this. Like, again, I'm not gonna, like, put this up here with, like, I don't know. Hereditary, you know?
No, not even close. It's not even up there with seeing some more middling movies, really. Like, it's garbage.
No,
it just passes the line.
I will say, in terms of, like, I did get some, like, entertainment factor out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, like, critics were a little bit harsh.
But yeah.
That's fine. It was the early 90s. Everyone was mean.
Scream wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They probably weren't digging the
sequels.
Scream
came out, what, 96?
96.
96. I was gonna say 95.
No, 96. Yeah. This is obviously part of the pre-Scream era, but also kind of like the post-80s era. A lot of movies coming from this particular time period. How does this film compare with other late 80s and early 90s King and King-esque horror films that we've covered here on the podcast?
They're nothing alike.
No?
I mean, it sucks because it's like, well, it doesn't suck, but I was looking, so other than the fact that it takes place in Maine.
Yeah.
That's it. Like.
Yeah.
And I was looking, like, I was kind of like, I wanted that late 80s, early 90s vibe. And in like aesthetic, yes, like you do get that late 80s feel, which I did kind of appreciate.
Yeah.
It is early 90s as fuck.
It's so early 90s.
Specifically early 90s.
Yeah.
Like, it is so quintessentially early 90s. It is ridiculous.
It's like they are trying really hard to be like, we're not the 80s anymore. Like, that they're trying really hard.
Yeah.
But, like, in a Stephen King-esque setting that doesn't feel kingy.
And it's like, this isn't Maine.
Mm-hmm. No.
This is Georgia.
This is so swampy Georgia. You can definitely get that vibe.
Yeah, I don't really feel the connection to Stephen King in this. Like,
no.
I don't. I wish I did, but I don't.
But it's too fast.
Well, you can tell he had nothing to do with it, right?
Yeah.
And even though I didn't know anything about the production, I didn't know anything about the movie going into it, I knew that watching it, like, I was like, there's no way Stephen King, like, wanted to be associated with this.
I agree. And it's, to me, it's not even King light. Like, it's not. Yeah. It's like, it's really its own thing. The closest analog I can think of in terms of, like, vibe and, like, bullshit is maybe the sixth Halloween film. The one with Paul Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where they're trying to, like, use a franchise but make a 90s as fuck graphic-ass movie with, like, guitar riffs and shit. Like, they... They really went kitchen sink on this one.
Yeah.
And I feel like they did that with Halloween as well, just a little bit after this.
Okay.
And it kind of falls in that vibe where, like, in the 90s, nobody what to do with these. They did not know what to do with these franchises. They just didn't know what to do.
Well, and you mentioned it right up top that a lot of these franchises, like a lot of the franchises, took a huge, huge hit in the 90s.
Jason Goes to Hell, another example too. Yep. Oh, yeah. One day, guys. One day.
Franchises. And it wasn't until 96 with Scream that really we got a revival of the genre. And I feel so bad for, like, people and for the 90s horror fans. Because there's a lot of garbage to kind of wade through.
Oh, and I watched all that garbage as a child.
Yeah.
I was that kid.
What got you into horror. Like, that's what raised you, dude.
But I did have a lot of 80s to pull from also. So, the whole repertoire was there.
I mean, you have 90, you have It from 1990.
That's true.
Which is probably, like, quintessential horror iconography. Like, Tim Curry.
And it feels Stephen King-y as fuck.
And that is Stephen King as fuck.
Yeah, see, I think that's a good point because that kind of has some Stand By Me vibes. That has some like some other vibes that you do not get with this movie at all.
No, you don't get Stand By Me vibes, which is funny considering that it's two teenage boys. Like, I'm like, I don't get Stand By Me vibes at all. I was going to bring that up earlier. I'm like, this is not Stand By Me at all.
No, these kids don't grow like in any way, shape, or form. They're the same people at the beginning of the movie, at the end of the movie.
The only thing is, what's his face is just like, okay, now I really have to accept my mom's dead. Like, that's the only thing.
Oh boy, so yeah, resurrecting the dead and killing half the town. You know what? I think I needed to work on my coping mechanisms. I think so. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right.
Let's get out of here, Dad. Sorry about your arm.
Right. Let's go, Dad. I won't call you a prick anymore, you know? Like, and then at the end, veterinarian Chase just turns and he's like, I'm so glad. And that, son, was your punishment.
Mm-hmm. That experience right there, you remember that shit, boy. He's like, Mom!
Mom!
Oh, yeah, I don't know. This was a weird one. Again, my closest, it's just the most, it's in the era of confused franchise movies. It's just confused.
Mm-hmm.
So, someone buries you, Miss Alex Webster, in the pet cemetery. What changes about you, and who do you target for revenge first?
Oh, man. What changes about me?
Yeah. What part of your demeanor is just like, what is the Clancy Brown transformation that you're going through?
I think my default reaction, like, or like my filter that stops me from just like saying every snarky mean thing that comes to thought is gone, and I just become like very mean.
Oh, that'll be fun. That'll be a good time.
Oh, cause like
you can wear those pants, huh? That's pretty cool.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
No, because, I mean, like most people, like, sometimes you catch yourself thinking, like, you know, bitchy things, and it's just like, no, rein it in, you're a good person, be a good person.
Yes.
That would be gone.
Yeah,
that would be
true.
Gone. So I would just be just a massive bitch, I think, and very aggressive, because that's also something that I've spent many years working on, is my aggression issues. And so that would be out the fucking window, so...
Yeah, that's a good point, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think pretty similarly. I am naturally a very sarcastic boy. And, you know, I just think my Super Smash Bros. Demeanor comes out a lot more as a regular person at this point, so...
I've seen you play Super Smash Bros.
Yeah, I'm gonna be vocal and competitive, so...
Are you competitive?
Oh, in Smash Brothers, yeah.
I mean, but in
general,
we're
shit talkers.
Sure, I mean, yeah. But Smash Bros is just like a part of your personality.
That's
would
true.
It become the entirety of your personality?
I think I'd be outwardly that particular trait for sure.
Okay, sure.
For sure. And because of that, I'd seek revenge on anybody who even won a match against me. Fuck them.
Sure, they're dead.
They're done. Oh, yeah, they're done.
So
I'm like,
hey,
remember that one fucking time you three-stocked me, you piece of shit?
I don't know who I would necessarily seek revenge from. Probably the people who have wronged me, and there is a list in my brain.
I feel like you would develop like a javelin type device, and every plane that interrupts our fucking podcast, you're just like, oh fuck you, that's going the propeller, son.
Yeah, that's
right.
That makes you sound way more badass.
Well, you have the undead arm strength, all right? You're good. You're good. You're Clancy Brown in this bitch. You got this.
Fair enough. Oh, God. What happens with the neighbors that keep interrupting?
Oh, those poor fucks.
I know.
You want to hear screaming?
Kick down the stairs.
By the way, kill the film?
Kill of the film. What's his face with the motorcycle?
Yeah, I agree. That's clearly the best kill.
Yeah.
It's clearly
the
best kill.
It's the most creative. It's the most fun. You can see a bully getting his just desserts.
And it's fucking terrifying.
And it's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
It's pretty brutal. Yeah. Like, you know, I wouldn't say it was terrifying for me, but that's because, you know, this is my first time watching it, and I'm 26 years old. I wasn't 9 when I watched it, so.
Yeah. I was, and it was horrifying. Well, now that we're here.
Yeah.
What would you rate Pet Sematary 2 out of 5 killer 90s jams?
I'm going to give it a solid 2.
You're going to give it a solid 2?
2.
Okay. All right.
Purely for entertainment factors, yeah.
I can totally understand that. I'm going to go a hair above Letterboxd. I'm going to give it a 2.6.
2.6.
That's why I say hair. I'm gonna give it the hair above Letterboxd, just because while down the middle would be average, I feel like I was entertained enough, specifically by its badness.
I some of our previous films of this month, I did give them a 2 as well, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
I liked them more than those ones, which makes the rating thing a little difficult. Actually, no, I'm gonna give it a 2.25.
I like it. Okay, another hair.
Another hair.
I can see that.
Just I'll give you this.
Yeah, I can see that. I kind of got to give it some, because honestly,
like, I did like this. I did enjoy this more than like Wrong Turn.
Yeah, and I feel like, despite it being all bullshit, like it's a bad movie, not a lazy movie. Nothing lazy about this production.
No, there was effort.
There was a lot of effort.
It was misplaced, but there was effort.
Oh, yeah. You get a great performance of Clancy Brown, who is batshit.
Yeah.
Who is like, nothing makes sense.
If you want to watch this movie just for some like pure like villain insanity alone, Clancy Brown is amazing in this movie.
But again, I think the caveat is you also see Clancy Brown in a rape scene. That's why it's like, I can't always give it a lot there, because like they see the line, and this movie crosses the line and it doesn't just do it good.
Right over it, yeah.
Doesn't do it good.
All right. I think that's it. That was Pet Sematary 2 from 1992, directed by Mary Lambert. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Next week, this is Halloween.
That's right. Spooky Halloween fucking season is happening.
Yes.
We are kicking off with a great month of like of some very, yes, very good selections.
So we're going from something absolutely graphic and brutal to something a little bit more wholesome.
Very, very whimsical from what I've seen so far.
It's super whimsical. I watched it for the first time last year, and it is just, it speaks to something in my soul that just, like, it's warming.
Yeah, I agree. I've not finished with it yet, but, because it is a series.
Yes. I mean, but collectively, to watch the entire miniseries is about an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's like, tiny. Yeah. But I will say, not spooky, but it has the Halloween vibe
It speaks to the Halloween spirit, which is all I could ever ask for.
Yeah.
So join us next week for that. It's like a kid's TV show. It's nothing like super like.
But it's available on HBO Max.
It's on HBO Max. It's on Hulu.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think it's actually on Hulu.
Because you have the HBO package.
I have the HBO thing, which is why. But yeah, it's on HBO Max if you have it. So join us next week for that, for something a little bit more wholesome, but still spooky, as we kick off October.
Yes.
Super excited. We have some awesome fucking picks. It's going to be a really cool month.
We got the return of one of our series we do every October. You know what it is.
You know what
it is. That's coming up.
It's my
favorite one, so. That'll be fun.
It'll be a good time.
We got another new franchise coming in. And we got some good old full-on nostalgia goggles coming up at the very end.
Nostalgia goggles. We have that. We have just some spooky, ghosty type shit. I'm excited.
I agree.
It'll be a good time. I hope you stick around for it. If you like what you heard this week, please follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. If you're listening on iTunes and you have an iPhone, please write us a 5-star review on podcasts, the app. It does help other people find this podcast, and it means the fucking world to us. And
it truly does.
It does actually help other people find this podcast.
So help them find it.
Yeah. And if you want other people to hear, you know, our funny little shenanigans. and then, let's see. And if you think, if after listening to all of this and all the work that we put into it, if you think we deserve a couple bucks for what we do every month, you can head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. We have 4 different tiers for you to choose from, and yeah, we have some awesome goodies there for you to check out as well.
Oh yeah, some shows that are very fun to record.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. It's very exclusive, but I mean, it's for you guys. So
yeah,
thank you.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And if you want to follow Anthony, he is on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. Mm-hmm. And I am on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
That's right.
I am currently doing a Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood rewatch.
Oh, I gotta watch that.
You've never seen it?
No, I know.
It's fine. I'm so out of date on like what the kids are watching in terms of anime these days.
These utes.
I know. There was something you recommended to me that I was like, oh, watch it, and I never did.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm so out of date with like anime type shit, but I'm just like going back and like, ah, oh, high school. What did I watch in high school? And it's like Full Metal Alchemist.
And me, that I'll probably get on my 6th Berserk watch at some point.
Right, so. Exactly. So anyway, yeah. If you want to watch me tweet about that, you can do that on Twitter. By the time this comes out, I'll probably be watching something else, but that's fine. And then what week does this come out? This weekend, we're going to be seeing Last Podcast on the Left at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. So if you're going to be there and you happen to see us, feel free to say hi.
That's right. Fellow podcasters watching fellow podcasters. That's right.
So until then,
let's play it out with some 90s jams.
Bye.